We're back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragon and Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
I am cold. It's getting cold in Cincinnati. I'm not really used to this cold weather, but, you know, I'm getting adjusted to it. It's my second season out here, but I'm never accustomed to the cold weather.
I've noticed that three of the past four Thursdays, there's been pouring torrential rain, including today. And I'm hoping the trend doesn't continue because I enjoy having a fun Thursday.
This weather reminds me a lot of Seattle. You know, rainy days, and that actually is a little bit of a connection here because we'll go ahead and talk about Carlos Dunlap. We've been talking about Carlos for about 2.5 weeks now, and now we have news. I was a little surprised the Bengals did trade Carlos Dunlap to Seattle to a contender, get a 7th-round pick, and B.J. Finney to help with the offensive line right now. When we talked about this, we've talked about trades. We've talked about releasing him. I'm a little surprised the Bengals did it because they've only had 3 trades in over my lifetime. The last one I can remember is Carson Palmer, of course, with the Raiders and getting 2 first rounders for that. But are you guys surprised the Bengals pulled off this trade?
I am a little surprised. As you mentioned, the Bengals haven't made it a trade since 2011, Carson Palmer. You know, I was more thinking that the Bengals were going to cut ties with him after the season. But it is a win for both sides. Carlos Dunlap, he wanted to start. He wanted to get playing opportunities. And he's going to get that in Seattle's 4-3 defense. And the Bengals, they didn't want, you know, Carlos Dunlap, you know, really in the locker room anymore because, you know, he was becoming a distraction. They won't say it, but, you know, him posting on social media, him having outbursts on the sideline, you know, he was clearly frustrated with his role and rightfully so because he's been a starter since he's been in Cincinnati. And then he, you know, pretty much got demoted and relegated to third string and a third down specialist. So it was a move that was best for both sides. Carlos Dunlap gets a change of scenery and the Bengals get a backup interior lineman and B.J. Finney. So, you know, I think it was a move that both sides can feel happy about.
What I was most surprised about was the value that the Bengals got for Carlos Dunlap. Obviously, he's one of the best edge rushers in the history of the franchise. However, if in August I would have posed the question to you guys, would you trade Carlos Dunlap for the package the Bengals got in return, you'd probably say no, but it would be worth the conversation. The number one rhetoric that we discussed heading into the season was that protecting Joe Burrow was the franchise's top priority. Well, Finney's a guy who demanded more in the open market than Xavier Suofilo did. So if 4 months ago Finney was that much more highly regarded than the player who the Bengals signed to start at right guard, there's a very strong case to bring someone like that into the franchise. Obviously, the situation changed since then. Finney didn't play an offensive snap in Seattle after losing a training camp battle. Carlos's value was likely impacted by the Bengals losing their leverage. It was very well known that Carlos wasn't happy with his role. Yet despite all that, the Bengals got back a package that is very respectable. The first words out of Zach Taylor's mouth yesterday, or one of them, was that it was a win-win for both sides. And this is the kind of situation that fits very much what both teams are looking for.
I think it was really telling when Mike Brown, of course, released a statement to him, and we heard from Zach Taylor later on in the afternoon, but they traded him to a contender. And I think that speaks to what Mike Brown thinks of Carlos Dunlap. And maybe I'm thinking far into it. Of course, they traded the guy, but they did trade him to somewhere where he could have some success. And of course, he wants to play and he's getting that. So I think it was a win-win for both sides. When it comes to the offensive line, though, we talked about the guard play because there was some poor guard play. Now they're dealing with injuries. I mean, right tackle Bobby Hart, you had Jonah Williams with the stinger, and they're going back to what we've talked about for over a year now, a little bit of musical chairs on the offensive line. But this actually falls at a good time because they have bye week coming up. If they can get Billy Price in there for one more snap at center, we've talked about trades with this team. There are rumors that they're not done trading guys. Everybody wants to point to John Ross, but I don't think they've found someone because everyone knows they're going to be done with John Ross at the end of 2020. So why give up any picks unless somebody's offering a seventh rounder, which if it already happened, I don't think the Bengals are going to do anything more because no one is picking up the phone on the other side. But I think it falls at a good time because if Trey Hopkins can go in 2 weeks, you can trade Billy Price, put B.J. Finney in there, or you can decide to move him, you know, for your interior guard play. So I think that really becomes intriguing because if you need a backup center, you do have it in B.J. Finney with him also playing guard.
Yeah, you do raise a good point. You know, personally, I do think the Bengals should strongly consider trading Billy Price and John Ross before the November 3rd trade deadline. It's become apparent that both of them need a change of scenery, especially John Ross. He's pretty much been inactive for this entire season, and he was out at practice again today with an illness. But as far as Billy Price, you know, I did raise a question to him. Does he view this as, you know, an opportunity for him to kind of revitalize his career and, you know, put good things on tape that he is still a starting caliber interior lineman? And he said, yeah. And so he is going to get to start this week because Trey Hopkins is out with a concussion, still in concussion protocol. But yeah, I do think that the Bengals should explore and see what they can get of value for Billy Price. But I don't see them making another significant trade before the deadline. That's just my opinion. I mean, we were surprised that the Bengals traded Carlos Dunlap because they haven't traded someone since 2011 in season. So I personally think they should do it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
And it's not just Billy Price. There's now a logjam throughout the interior offensive line with the players who the Bengals have brought in slash are likely and reported to be bringing in, and Finney and Spain. Spain's a guy who, based off reports I've read, had a number of suitors across the league. I think it's very unlikely that he comes here and doesn't start immediately, or maybe not immediately, but in the long term, once he gets up to speed with the playbook. And then you have Zaire Bisuafilo coming back from injury. He's been out a while. Bengals signed him to be a starter. You have Michael Jordan, who Jonah Williams raved about earlier this week. And he's performed admirably after, you know, coming off an early stretch last season where he proved that he was worth a lot of this season. So the Bengals have numbers for the first time in what feels like a long time with the offensive line on the inside. They still don't have great depth at tackle, especially with Jonah Williams dealing with the stinger and with Bobby Hart out, at least for this week. But they have some tough choices to make now. It'll be interesting to track during the bye week.
We've talked a lot about the injuries, and I think the Bengals they hit the injury list pretty hard just in the last couple weeks. And this week alone, you're going to be without Joe Mixon. The good news, William Jackson III is back. Their offensive line is looking a little light right now. But, Tyler, any big news on the injury front?
Well, William Jackson III, he should be back and playing this week. He's been at practice the last 2 days, so that is good news. He was a full participant during Thursday's session. But the bad news is there are a lot of players that are not participating in practice, and we already kind of named them. Jonah Williams is not practicing because of a stinger around his neck. You got Bobby Hart, who's out with a knee injury, will not be in the lineup this week. Joe Mixon, they haven't officially ruled him out yet, but I am thinking that he is going to be out. Darius Phillips is another big name who has not practiced this week because of a knee injury. So the Bengals are the walking wounded right now on offense and defense. So it's going to be tough when they play a Tennessee Titans team who is coming off a loss, but, you know, they are first in their division.
All of the attention, it feels like, on the injury front has gone to the Bengals, hobbled offensive line and defensive line. We've already discussed what the depth of the offensive line looks like currently, with potentially three starters out this week. And on the defensive line, of course, with Reeder out, Hubbard out, Dunlap just got traded, Atkins is in a limited room. However, there's a lack of depth at cornerback, too. Last week, Darius Phillips got the start and at number one corner and defended Odell Beckham Jr. throughout that first quarter. Well, now Phillips has missed practice this week, and William Jackson has gotten back closer to form. He was practicing today, but it's his first week back from a concussion. So I think that you might see a lot more of LaShawn Sims and maybe even Tony Brown and Winston Rose this week. The Bengals' depth in the secondary is really being tested for the first time all season.
The good news is the Tennessee Titans aren't, you know, a pass-happy team. They like to hand that rock off to that behemoth running back in Derrick Henry. So their cornerbacks, they'll get tested, but they won't get tested a lot like, you know, if they were playing the Kansas City Chiefs. That'll be a nightmare. But so the Tennessee Titans team, they get a little bit of a break because they don't pass the football often.
Tyler, I'm half kidding when I say this, but it's not like Baker Mayfield's Joe Namath either. So.
Well, he could have fooled a lot of people in the second half with the way he plays, but Baker Mayfield is just a Bengals killer. I mean, what he looks like against the Bengals is a Hall of Famer. I'm not even joking. He looks good out there against the Bengals defense. I mean, it is the Bengals defense, but
21 straight completions. That's unheard of. That was a very good performance by Baker Mayfield. I don't think in my time covering the NFL, I've seen a quarterback make 21 straight completions. So that was a first for me.
And he did it to receivers who really weren't even NFL players at the beginning of the season. That was also the most surprising part to me. And the Titans have a pretty good receiving core. So we'll see how that develops on Sunday.
I want to go back to the Bengals defense because just the way they played in the last couple weeks, the offense has done enough to win the football game. We talk about hot seat. We're at the midpoint in the season. Is Lou Anarumo on the hot seat? Even though they are dealing with injuries, they can't get to the quarterback. Looking at them 2 minutes going into halftime, end of game, they just look like a disaster out there. If they fail on the defensive side and the offense keeps them in the game, any surprises after the game?
I don't think the Bengals are going to make any coaching staff change until after the season, if they even make one after the season. I don't think Lou Anarumo is in danger of losing his job. The Bengals, they've been decimated by injuries on both sides of the ball. The defensive line really has not performed up to par this entire season, and that was the strength of their unit last year. But you have DJ Reader out with the season-ending injury. You know, Sam Hubbard has been out for the last few weeks. Carlos Dunlap didn't pan out. Geno Atkins is, you know, has a shoulder injury, and, you know, that's been hampering him throughout this year. A cornerback, I mean, I could go on and on and on. Trey Waynes is most likely going to miss all the season. He may come back in late November. So, you know, you can just go up and down the list why this Bengals defense has not been successful. And, you know, overall, they've just played better teams. You know, the Bengals, they ranked 24th overall in total defense. That's, you know, a little bit better than last year. And, you know, they are stopping the run a little bit better than last year. I mean, honestly, they have improved slightly. It's not, you know, a lot to be, you know, happy about, but they have made, you know, moderate improvement. Not enough to be successful in this league or even the division. But yeah, I don't think Lou Anarumo is in danger of losing his job yet. I know a lot of Bengals fans do not like me saying that. Even though I don't reply to my mentions, I do see them sometimes. So he's not in danger of losing his job.
One of the biggest takeaways from Sunday's post-game Zoom call, something we've already discussed, is the faith that players, specifically the captains, put in Zach Taylor. I think that, you know, it really is Lou Anarumo's defense. And Zach Taylor obviously came up as an offensive coach. And Anarumo has a huge responsibility on that side of the ball in keeping those guys together. I think that he deserves some of the credit for the locker room, quote unquote, staying together, for the belief in Zach Taylor and the coaching staff. These are topics we've already discussed about how Dunlap didn't significantly have a huge sway on the state of the Bengals franchise and the state of the locker room. Specifically, when we've spoken to defensive players this week, they've said that. I think Anarumo deserves some of that credit as well with Zach Taylor in keeping the quote unquote culture while the Bengals defense has clearly been struggling. So one, that's a check mark for Anarumo. And then on top of that, I completely agree with Tyler in that the defense is decimated in ways that the Bengals could not have predicted. And in the two previous off seasons before this one, the Bengals have done almost nothing to address and bring in talent through free agency or trades to help the defense, which as a result leads to the Bengals leaning on guys like Marcus Hunt and Xavier Williams and Amani Bledsoe. There's just not a ton there to work with. When there was, the Bengals were pretty good against Baltimore, against Philadelphia, against the Los Angeles Chargers, against the Jaguars. They had some very impressive moments this season. I think that they still believe there are more of those moments to come with Lou Anarumo.
You know what's really crazy is we've talked since pretty much week one. You got to protect Joe Burrow, you know, give him the guys around him. I feel like, and we've talked about this plenty of times, he has the weapons out there when you look at his wide receiver room and even in the running back room. And when CJ Uzama is healthy, you get Sample and Uzama out there too on offense. I don't even think it's about the weapons. And if you get the good guard play, semi-good guard play, you're not going to replace three guys on the offensive line this offseason. They might try. You know, who knows in free agency if they go big again. And then, of course, in the draft, you're going to focus on it. But let me ask you guys this. You look at the D-line struggles. If the offensive line can get it together, I know they're not healthy right now, and they play semi-okay and protect Joe Burrow and you really fix that guard play, would you make your main focus? I might get criticized for this, and I can't believe I'm even talking about this right now. It's only week eight, right before the bye week. I don't want to be a draft person.
I mean, they're not going to the playoffs, so you got to look forward to something.
Do you think this team, if that playmaker's there in the first round, would go D-line?
That's a really good question. And to me, it all depends, one, where their spot at is in the draft and best player available. If the best player available is a defense alignment, I do think you go with, you know, hopefully an edge rusher. But if the best player available is a tackle, I would draft a right tackle or even a guard. But I mean, if the Bengals are picking in the top five, it's a tough sell to get a pick a guard in the top five. So you're either looking at a tackle or an edge rusher. And I think that's, probably the Bengals' top priorities this offseason and in that 2021 NFL draft.
I think that the Bengals shouldn't reach for a tackle early because they have too many other needs they might need to fill. I do think right tackle is extremely important heading into the offseason, and I think that might be where the Bengals would be most wise to spend some of the money they're planning to use in free agency. A lot of times you can bring in a proven veteran offensive tackle that can be better able suited to play right away for a Bengals team that probably should be thinking about winning 7, 8, 9, 10 games next season. And then with that top draft pick, I think it comes down to whichever players you don't extend in replacing them. If Carl Lawson gets away, if Lane Jackson gets away, if AJ Green gets away, if any of those happen, those open up glaring holes on this Bengals roster. So any one of those might be an opportunity, a possibility to use with a top 10 pick.
I think when you look ahead at the schedule, the bye week couldn't come any sooner. But first, they have to go against the Tennessee Titans. Then they'll have the Steelers after that. Their schedule looks a little bit better the second half of the season. But going into week eight, they're back home at Paul Brown Stadium. The offense has played well for 2 weeks straight. I just have a feeling this is going to be the week that the defense just can't stop Derrick Henry. And that's not really much of a hot take with the way the defense has been playing. But I just feel like he's going to have a field day. And looking ahead to this game at Paul Brown Stadium, what do you guys think is going to happen?
How many yards do you think Derrick Henry is going to have?
125.
Any touchdowns?
Two.
125 yards and two touchdowns. Oof.
I mean, I have a feeling it's going to be Derrick Henry Day at Paul Brown Stadium because the defense, to their credit, I'm putting quotation marks here, they actually have done a good job stopping the run lately, and I feel like that's going to be the day where it all unravels. So I think the Tennessee Titans are going to take that one at Paul Brown Stadium 24-14.
Yeah, you know, it's more than Derrick Henry. The Titans have one of the best offensive lines in all of football, and they're going up against a banged-up Bengals defensive line. So they're going to open up holes for Derrick Henry to run through, and he is the best downhill runner in football. He has 500 yards total after contact. I just think that, you know, going to have their way running the football on the Bengals. They're ranked number 5 in all of football rushing. So I have the Tennessee Titans winning this game and, you know, improving to 6-1 on the year. I have them winning 26-20. I think the Bengals are going to score some points, but it won't be enough to beat a Titans team who are probably going to end up winning their division and going into the playoffs again this season.
I think the Titans are going to win 30-24. However, what I disagree with you guys is I think it's going to be a Ryan Tannehill game instead of a Derrick Henry game. Ryan Tannehill, if you look back to when he started being the quarterback for the Titans, has put up close to MVP caliber numbers. However, the Bengals have proven to be a team that has a defense, which is top priority in stopping the run. You look at what they did against Baltimore. The whole scheme that they drew up was preventing Lamar Jackson from making explosive plays out of the pocket. You look at the players who they've signed and elevated and make a role, guys like Williams and Bledsoe. Those are guys whose biggest priority is being a run stopper. Even guys that have linebacker like Jermaine Pratt and Josh Bynes and safety Von Bell. They've proven that they are better at stopping the run than stopping the pass. I think that the Bengals kind of fell out in stopping Henry because that's what you have to do against a team like Baltimore, just like they did against a team like Tennessee, just like they did against Baltimore. I think the Bengals' offense matches, but 30-24 Tennessee.
How many yards do you have Derrick Henry getting this week?
He'll end up with probably like 80, I think, but I could see Tannehill getting into the 250, 300 range.
Wow, Tannehill getting 300 yards. Okay.
We're predicting a lot of L's this season. We've actually been pretty good on our predictions.
We have been good. I think I've been undefeated in one tie. I think you guys have a couple L's.
I do. I actually picked them to win the opener. You know, I was an OPI call away from them taking that opener at home. You can look at a lot of games, actually one-score games this season. But we won't get into that. Week 8 is coming up. The Cincinnati Bengals take on the Tennessee Titans. I'll have a PFF Extra with Evan McPhillips. We'll look at the numbers, the offensive line play, and how bad the defense has played the last couple weeks. What's up on Cincinnati.com, guys?
So I have three keys that are coming up here today, and also everything on the Carlos Dunlap saga, him being traded, and what the Bengals got back in return in the offensive linemen. So keep it locked on Cincinnati.com, and I'll also have some more stories coming on later this week.
It's a busy week for me as well. The story up, who is EJ Finney and 5 things to know about him. My weekly Joe Burrow film analysis, all positive plays from last week. And then I also have a story up on Giovanni Bernard. Now he has waited his turn and now finally gotten a chance to be the Bengals starting running back.
Each week we talk to our friends over at PFF. This week, Evan McPhillips. Evan, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Lindsay. How about yourself?
Not too bad. We have another loss to talk about, but there were some positive things on the offensive side. I actually want to go to that right now because of the way the offensive line has played in the last couple weeks. They started to gain a little bit of chemistry, and then in the second half, they had to deal with some of their starters out. Bobby Hart sideline at right tackle, Jonah Williams with the stinger, and then they lost Trey Hopkins at center. If somebody would have told me going into that game they were going to lose two of their best offensive line pieces, I would have said, good luck, Joe Burrow. But offensively, the offensive line got it together with some of their backups.
No, they actually held up really well. And Bobby Hart had one of his best games maybe ever and posted an 83.6 overall grade and an impressive 88.2 run blocking grade. And he held his own in the pass blocking game as well with a 77.4 grade. And I think what was really promising is to see Michael Jordan, one of the young guys who's really struggled so far, kind of continue to progress to take a step forward. You mentioned he graded a little bit higher in the last game or two, and then he came out and had a 75.3 overall grade with a 76.3 pass blocking grade. So if they can even, like I referenced earlier in a tweet yesterday, was the idea of the Bengals being able to find a piece they can rely on to fill up at least one of those guard spots on the interior that they can feel good about. And hopefully this is the start of Michael Jordan kind of taking that step forward so that maybe they don't feel so stressed to have to address that using prime resources in the draft or free agency, and they have that flexibility to kind of play the field and see what happens. And you did mention that they did have Billy Price make an appearance after Trey Hopkins went out, and he actually did very well. Surprisingly, he went back to playing center instead of guard, and he was much better in pass blocking and in 33 pass blocking snaps. He had an 82.4 pass block grade and a 70.7 run block grade in his time up there as well. Unfortunately, he did have the two penalties, which kind of brought down his overall grade. But compared to where he's been grading in the low 30s and 40s before that, it's really encouraging to see him kind of take a step forward. And who knows, maybe he can even give them some of the backup reps that they may need with some of these injuries going on here, or maybe he increases his value or appeal to the point where maybe the Bengals can look at trading him for someone else.
I think that could be really some optimistic on both sides for Billy Price, because I know the guy wants to play, but he's really more comfortable as a center. So if Trey Hopkins can go in 2 weeks, their bye falls out a great week when they bring in a guy like BJ Finney, who can be a backup center and also play guard. So that could be good for Billy Price and the Cincinnati Bengals. I want to get to those guard players right now. It's not official with Quentin Spain. Because of COVID, it makes things a little bit tricky. What does Quentin and BJ Finney bring to guard play on the offensive line?
Well, I think one thing that Quentin brings is he's played 800 or more snaps in each of his last four seasons. So he gives you that durability factor, which I'm sure they would love to have right about now. But he also gives you some consistency in the pass blocking game, where he's posted over a 70 pass blocking grade in each of his first five seasons in the NFL before having a 51.7 on the year and only 110 pass blocking snaps. So from what I understand, they wanted to bring some of their younger guys like Cody Ford and give them an opportunity, and that he no longer had a position there and wasn't going to see the playing time that maybe he wanted. So the Bengals may have lucked into someone here who they may be able to kind of rely upon. His best days were in Tennessee, and those are about, you know, almost two seasons removed now, but he was still serviceable in Buffalo last year with a 71.2 pass blocking grade. And though he's been lackluster in run blocking, I think anyone would be excited about the idea of being able to keep Joe Burrow upright in the pass blocking game and maybe sacrifice a little bit of that run blocking. But looking at BJ Finney, you also see someone who's played kind of limited snaps. He's never had more than 350 snaps in a season. He's played 165, 235, 300, but he has looked good in pass blocking as well, just like Spain in that time. In 235 snaps in 2017, he had an 89.6 pass block grade, and in 325 snaps last season in Pittsburgh in 2019, he had a 72.0 pass blocking grade. So he's serviceable, and he's a guy who brings experience playing at left guard, right guard, and center. So I think it's really just about them getting value back for Carlos Dunlap, who I think everybody was kind of surprised to see anything else attached to that seventh round pick after seeing Everson Griffin go for the sixth. So being able to get another player back that can give them that depth, and maybe he finds his legs in Cincinnati and they end up having someone who can be a serviceable backup for them and a good swing piece that can help them fill in the pieces for this patchwork offensive line they'll have to deal with over the next couple of weeks.
I'm going to go to the ground game right now, because they're more than likely going to be without Joe Mixon until after the bye. That would be week 10 versus the Steelers. I feel like Gio Bernard, when he's asked to step up, he really does. I know a lot of people look at him as more of a third down back out there, but from his blocks to just him on the ground, I think he's an underrated piece on this offense.
Absolutely. And his presence was definitely felt in the passing game, and you could see in 11 pass blocking snaps, he didn't allow a single pressure, and he actually had the highest pass blocking grade on the team with an 86.2. And he actually had a really nice blitz pickup that Matt Minnick highlighted the other day, where he picked up a really tremendous blitz. He had a tremendous blitz pickup, and then Joe Burrow rolled out and hit, I think it was T. Higgins on the sideline there. So he really was able to kind of relieve that pressure a little bit and make Joe Burrow probably more assured that any pressure coming his way was going to get picked up and help him be more comfortable to maybe buy a little more time, get creative and make those plays. But Gio did look good. And despite the lack of rushing success overall, he did chip in the receiving game, where he caught all five of his targets for almost 60 yards and a touchdown, averaging 11.8 per. So he was really helpful in giving Joe Burrow an option when pressure got there very quickly. They had some nice screens drawn up for him, and it looked like he fit really well into their game plan.
You mentioned T. Higgins, and we talked to T. Higgins last week, and he said early in the season he felt a little nervous when he's out there, but you're really going to see a different wide receiver. And I think the Bengals are really starting to see this right now, because you put Tyler Boyd over in the slot, and I know he's a high over on PFF right now, but have you been impressed with T. Higgins?
Absolutely. I think there were maybe not concerns, but he didn't have necessarily the dynamic athletic profile that a lot of people were wanting from a back end of the first round wide receiver, but he's really kind of just showed that he can be still explosive, and he can even be the deep threat for the Bengals, as they've seen with a couple nice catches. And he can also be that consistent target, a good possession receiver for Burrow. And he's getting really comfortable, and you can see that in the most recent weeks. He's actually PFF's second highest graded rookie receiver right now, and he's actually in the top 30 of about 80 receivers that qualify. So he's really been playing well, and you saw that, and it felt like the offense itself was kind of all coming together, where you saw T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and AJ Green all seem to switch off on who was contributing at different times in the passing game. And it was really nice to see that every single one seemed to be thriving. You see all three of them with over 70 receiving grades. So to see them all in rhythm, and even Drew Sample getting involved in the passing game, catching 5 of his 6 targets, that was really helpful that everyone seemed to be on. The passing game was going very well and getting them good chunk yardage and constantly helping them to convert third downs. And then even though the running game wasn't working so well, it worked enough that they were able to complement it with a very successful and efficient passing game that it worked out and resulted in a lot of points for the Bengals.
Was Sunday Joe Burrow's best game?
I think it's important to remember that Joe Burrow had some exceptional plays, right? But he also did have some of those turnover-worthy plays. And so there was obviously that tipped interception is a little difficult, but there was also the throw right to Terrence Mitchell that could have been intercepted. There were the fumbles that were a little bit of an issue. And so he ended up not having the best grade of the season. I think it was the Jaguars game that was the best grade, but it wasn't that it was a bad game from Joe Burrow. It's just we saw a lot of the high end and a lot of the low end, and he ended up with a 66.2 grade, which is above average. And so it's not to say that Joe Burrow didn't play well. It's just that some of those throws or some of those plays like that dropped interception, we just kind of delete from our brain, partly because we don't want to remember them. But they did still happen, and it's important to take note of them and their impact on the game. But I think what you did see is a lot of those high upside plays from Joe Burrow, where he extended the play, rolling out right, hitting T. Higgins, rolling out left, hitting Mike Thomas on a big gain down the stretch there in the fourth quarter. And I think you see these high upside plays like the 3rd-and-11 rush where he went and called his own number and picked up the first down. So you see the good with Joe Burrow. And it's just about limiting the rookie mistakes, limiting the throws that you just got to learn that you can't make. And so hopefully he can cut down on a little bit of those mistakes, and maybe the offensive line at the same time can try and help to prevent some of that pressure that's been forcing some of these ball security issues as well.
Let's go to the defensive line right now. Some of the negative play we've seen over the last pretty much all season long. They can't get to the quarterback. They've done a good job stopping the run in the last couple weeks. Carl Lawson has been a positive if you want to find one on the D-line. What's going on with Geno Atkins, and what can we expect on Sunday?
Well, you saw Geno had limited snaps again, and so there's concerns that maybe he's not all the way healthy right now. And for that, we're just going to have to rely on Geno and the coaching staff kind of communicating on what's best for him. Hopefully they can see him playing more snaps sooner rather than later, because as you mentioned, they're decimated on that front right now, and everyone's trying to pitch in as best they can. And you did see Xavier Williams playing, and he got a 62.9, and that was on the higher side of their defensive line, along with Cal Kareem and Marcus Hunt rotating in as well. But a lot of these guys are playing about 20 or so snaps and rolling out. And then you had Mike Daniels come back. He only played about 25 snaps and earned a 61.4 grade, but there's just no impact on this line. They only ended up getting 5 pressures and 3 hits and 2 hurries on Baker Mayfield. And you saw Carl Lawson had 3 of those 5 pressures. So really he's out there trying to do it all himself right now. Geno's still getting worked back in. They're missing Sam Hubbard. They really could use that help. And hopefully Khalid Kareem can maybe, who's done well in limited snaps, grading in about the high 60s and low 70s, maybe he could get a little bit bigger role now that Dunlap has moved on, and we can see what the rookie can get to this team, because they definitely need a spark on that defensive line. And the linebackers were just getting picked on in coverage all day as well. So maybe Logan Wilson can get out there for a few more plays that, you know, Josh Bynes and Jermaine Pratt seem to be just constantly getting picked on in coverage, and maybe that athleticism could help spark the Bengals. If not in the Titans game coming up, then after the bye, when the Bengals have more time to kind of revisit everything and kind of regroup and figure out how they want to approach the second half of the season.
some good news on the defensive though, but William Jackson III could be back for the secondary. What's it been like out there with this team dealing with some of the injuries when you look at the secondary without some of their top cornerbacks?
Oh, they absolutely felt they felt that they missed William Jackson, and it showed absolutely. They were getting picked on in the secondary where, yes, Phillips had that great interception, which was a good play, but he allowed all three of his other three targets to be caught. One for the touchdown there at the end of the game, 62 yards and still 116 rating when targeted. And then obviously I mentioned the linebackers getting picked on in coverage too. Jermaine Pratt allowing all three of his targets to be caught for 33 yards and a touchdown. Josh Bynes allowing two of his three. Mackenzie Alexander didn't look great either after looking pretty well when he was healthy. After looking good when he was healthy early in the season and playing well, he allowed five of his six targets to be caught for 59 yards. And so you see that they're constantly struggling. Von Bell's been getting kind of a little bit burned in the passing game as well. He gave up four of his five targets for catches for 47 yards and two touchdowns. So really it's just, they need, if Trey Waynes isn't going to be their savior, and obviously he may not be eligible to return until at least December from his injury, if at all this season, then they really need someone else to step up and help out. And it's looked like Darius Phillips at times, but he's had his fair share of struggles. And Mackenzie Alexander has been valuable against the run, but we're going to need to see more consistency from the other cornerbacks in coverage. Otherwise, it's going to be very long. It's going to be long games for the Bengals defense, trying to just rely on Jesse Bates and William Jackson to constantly make plays in coverage.
Good stuff. Evan McPhillips again. PFF is where you're going to want to go all season long. What's up there right now?
We've got our fantastic week 8 preview at PFF. So go check that out. It's got your betting advice, your fantasy advice, and some important matchups to watch for the upcoming week. We've got our wide receiver cornerback matchup charts and breakdowns for your fantasy to help you find the best matchups to win your week. And of course, you should check out the Chris Collinsworth podcast with Richard Sherman. I highly recommend checking that out. It's a great time.
Good stuff as always. Thanks for joining us, Evan.
I appreciate it, Lindsay. Thanks for having me.
Make sure you check it out, Cincinnati.com. Follow over on Twitter, ENQ Sports, on the Instagram, ENQ Bengals. And thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.